Donald. A lot of fun stuff to check out. We were talking about it off air, about all the different things going on. We've got turkey opener. We've got...
Well, it's opening probably different dates in
different
states,
areas.
But I think the in the case of Minnesota, I believe it starts probably today or this weekend.
Yep. I've got that on the website.
There's like five or six
DNR,
seasons.
So you can check that out. Check us out on Facebook and thevalleyoutdoors.com, and you'll find all that info right there. Yep. Don't miss a thing.
Are you going this year?
No.
I'm planning
on a turkey hunt.
I think I got a week in there about second or third season, I believe, that I can go out and see if I can get lucky again.
Yeah, I don't know what's finding a place to go, and I just...
It's pretty fun just to sit there and listen to nature early in the morning before the sun comes up. And
call them in.
See if you can do it, you know. Mm-hmm. Last year it was 2 days of nothing. Third day, here come one old Tom over the top of the hill, and he was...
Charging.
I don't know if he was having a hard time finding a girlfriend that day or what, but
I haven't gone turkey hunting since I was like 15.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really my thing. But I might enjoy it now that it's been
you need
another 15 years.
So have you heard of those earmuffs that you wear that's got the
amplifier
mm-hmm. in them? So my son, he said, here, try these out. These work really good. And you're sitting there. I mean, you can hear a sparrow chirp a quarter mile away is a problem. So
too
you
much.
Hear it. Well, it's almost too much. So I'm trying to figure out how to turn it down. Finally, I took them off because until I needed to put them on. But
a little overload, sensory overload?
Well, you hear a little chickadee in the bush behind you, and you think it's a 25-pound tom coming through the woods, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there is that.
Yeah.
You have those moments.
It's kind of fun.
Even without it, you're sitting deer hunting, and you're like, oh, that stupid red squirrel. Would you stop?
Yes.
Every time I hear one, when it gets to that, like, nothing's happening, and then you hear a squirrel, you're like, oh,
yeah,
don't move.
Don't breathe.
And then you hear this. No, not good. Not good. So I saw this come up in one of my websites that I peruse often, and I thought it was rather cool. The best and worst fishing scenes in Hollywood.
Okay.
In the movies, right?
All right.
As the story goes, through cinematic history, there have been a lot of both the good and the bad, or the ones that are just horrible. And films and directors and writers put together research. They created scenes when fishing action feels authentic. Now, I have been on video shoots where I've been basically the technical advisor. And you'd be very surprised at what they want to do versus what would really happen. And you have to be very careful how you create advice that will make this realistic or make it not realistic. It's a lot of it was on commercial shoots, that kind of thing. But when they write something in and they put it on a storyboard and you're not necessarily part of the storyboard portion of it to see it, and then they want to do this when they explain it to you, and I'm like, that's not going to happen. That's not even close to reality. And then you see some commercials do the same way. So I've been involved with it when Hollywood decides to go over the top. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
best fishing scenes. You ready? Ava,
I'm
holding your breath.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A river runs through it.
Yeah. I think I've seen that one.
You can't make a list about fishing movies without that. You know what year that was made?
No.
1992. I can't believe it's been that long. Robert Redford directed it. And best scene comes towards the end of the movie when Norman and Paul take one last trip down the Blackfoot River. Norman is traditionally the weaker angler of the two. The brothers catches a stonefly on his neck, ties it on a matching fly pattern, makes a cast, immediately catches a extremely large trout, captures the essence of those moments in fly fishing when you know you made the right choice. Number two, Jaws.
Oh, I knew it was going to come up.
You can say what you want about the Hokie robot, but somehow unrealistic it is to have a 25-foot great white stalking humans in the waters of Maine, but it hits home. Don't you think?
I don't know.
Use a butterball turkey for bait and a beer keg for a bobber. I mean, that's pretty heavy duty.
Waste,
am I wrong?
Waste of turkey.
And Quint, the ultimate fisherman. The ultimate hardcore fisherman.
Mm-hmm.
These are some
scar.
Of the best. Yeah.
On Golden Pond. I didn't consider that one.
No, I didn't either.
Best scene is the first time Norman and Billy go trout fishing. They anchor up on the secret cove, set the rods down, and eat lunch. All of a sudden, he gets a strike, sets the hook, and the fight between both of them, all the grouchiness, unhappiness goes away, and it makes you miss all the grumpy anglers you see out in the water. And there's a lot of them you get out there, they're grumpy.
Yeah.
Speaking of grumpy, number three.
Grumpy old man.
Grumpy old man. Yeah. Absolutely. And you have to laugh at the ice shacks they had.
Yeah, they're pretty classic.
Yeah, very classic.
Very creative.
Exactly.
You don't see many that creative out there.
And anymore. Last but not least on the best ones, the River Wye. You ever heard of that?
No.
Relatively unknown and severely underrated, the River Wye is an excellent 2010 film based on an even more excellent 1983 novel. Coming-of-age story, a young man named Gus is trying to find his way in life while dealing with the constant bickering of his bait-fishing mother and fly-fishing father. Oh, that would be entertaining. Eventually abandons his family and flees to the cabin beside the river to find his own way in the fishing world and finds himself. Now for the bad. Are you guys ready for this?
Oh, those are the good ones, huh? Jaws was a good one.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Salmon fishing in Yemen.
Miss that one too.
2011. It's supposed to be a metaphor for faith and hope. For God's sakes, if you're going to make a movie about salmon fishing, you better do a good job.
Yeah.
Comes to fishing, it just falls flat. The fish being pursued is Atlantic salmon. Both scenes where one gentleman, the lead, hooks a fish. He does so in a very first cast. And as any Atlantic salmon angler can tell you, hooking one of those in your first cast is akin to winning the lottery. So it gets no marks on that one. You're never going to guess this either. Lord of the Rings, Return of the King. The scene between Smeagol.
Oh, it's Smeagol.
On a fishing trip with his cousin Deagle. Smeagol. They thread a pair of worms in their hooks and cast them off the side of the boat. Deagle hooks the pairs what is a Chinook salmon. Powerful fighters, and I know the river folk in Lord of the Rings, they're small, but there's no situation where freshwater fish is going to pull a person out of the boat. I don't care what your line is made of. Yellowstone.
The TV show?
Yeah, and I have to agree. Season 1, Episode 1, Duttons go down, three of them go down to the river to proceed to catch trout on horseback with fly rods. Beyond the frantic splashing of the horses would somehow scare the fish away. The actual casting, the actors, is abysmal. I have to agree, it was a horrible scene. And there was another scene when the new gentleman that came into town was going to try and scare the Duttons off of their ranch and whatever. The guy that got bit by a rattlesnake, Rhett kind of gave him. He was fly fishing, and he was not doing any service to fly fishermen at all either. It was rather disappointing, so... Two bad scenes.
It's kind of like if they're not going to do it right, why have them do
why
it?
Why do it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, realistically, you can't fly fish with it from a horse. Visuals.
I don't remember seeing that. I do remember him sitting on the bank fishing with his grandson, but he was on a horse, huh? Walking down the stream.
The brothers were on horses.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
All right, we got time for one more.
All right, Walking Dead. Zombie show, 11 seasons, and apparently there was two of the leads that they're canoeing around a quarry, regular rock quarry, to catch fish. During the scene, they start discussing their father who taught them both to fish in a conversation. Didn't Dad teach you to tie nail knots? And this other person says, well, why would he do that? He only ever used a fisherman's knot. One knot. No, he didn't. He tied at least three. Clinch knots? No. Okay. Anyway, it got into a knot conversation. And they were discussing wet lures, dry lures, and the hook getting seated, which it sets a hook, not seated. So the whole language is the whole thing was just upside down and horrible. And apparently they got a mix of tilapia, bluegill, and saltwater snapper, all from the freshwater reservoir in Georgia. So failing on every single scenario. There you go. Don't look to advice from The Walking Dead. There you go. Hey, tell you what, we're going to be right back. Got some more stories coming right up. We're going to talk about what's going on in Lake Michigan. And that's a pretty impressive story, what's going on with the alewife, and they've been able to maintain. So hang tight. We'll be right back. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors Radio Show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference. So you're going to go out and see some movie stuff?
No. No, I don't need to.
You don't need to?
No.
All right, we'll put that off for another time.
Yeah, I'll try to get myself just to get out in the woods or out in the stream. I'd like to try some stream fishing this year, but we'll see if I got the time.
Yeah, the streams at least around here should be pretty good.
Yeah.
The rest of it won't be, but it is what it is. Big thing coming out of, if you ever heard of MN Fish or Minnesota Fish, MN yeah. Fish.
Yep.
Ron Shera, big proponent of it. If you don't know Ron Shera, he's been on a ton of outdoor programming.
Television.
Television, all different types, Rooster Tails, Ron and Raven. Just
he's had
an
TV
icon
for years
in the industry.
In the Midwest, anyway.
Yep, exactly. And he's the president of Minnesota Fish, MN Fish, and it's a new sport, American Sport Fishies. Sport Fishing Association report, and they emphasize what MNFISH is doing, and they're trying to get the governor of the state, Tim Walz, and the legislature to recognize the importance of contribution that fishing has to the state's economy, but also the national economy. And a recent report out of Alexandria, Virginia, produced by the American Sport Fishing Association, illustrated just how important sport fishing is as an economic engine for creating wealth and jobs and pumping investments into land and water. And the report of 2023 highlights the angler participation in fishing economic impact for all 50 states. The upshot of this, America's 52.4 million anglers, which is astronomical, they contribute $148 billion in economic output and support 945,000 jobs across the United States.
No, a huge impact.
And that includes $1.8 billion funneled into conservation measures important to fish, other wildlife, and the environment. Fishing generates significant economic impact, and especially true to Minnesota, where nearly 30% of the state's population fishes, Ron said. We're going to have him on, I think, next week. I just have to confirm, but he's awesome. Great conversationalist. And they have the MNFISH, that's a coalition formed in 2018 to represent both anglers and fishing industry stakeholders. And they're really, really working at trying to get Tim Walz to push that with the legislature. Currently, Minnesota DNR Fish Management Program has an annual budget of roughly $31 million, which is funded primarily from fishing licenses. The Shera and other conservationists say that isn't nearly enough. We're happy Governor Walz is on board with increasing in funding for fish hatchery and boat access improvements, but we don't know what the legislature is going to do, Shera said. We need anglers to step up and put pressure on the elected officials to see that it gets done. It's in everyone's interest to make that happen. According to the report, the Minnesota ranks fourth in economic output, generating $4.2 billion, includes 28,000 jobs in the industry in the state of Minnesota. Top state is Florida, $13.9 billion. And of course, that's a year-round boating, fishing type thing. Not that Minnesota isn't, but not everybody wants to ice fish. All total, Minnesota 1.86 million anglers account for $2.7 billion of spending. And it is, we have two of the top five congressional districts in economic output. And pretty impressive, I will say that. We need to fix the problem instead of normalizing it as far as the money that is being put out. Adding the smart environmental policy is a good policy, but we're not fixing it right now. Mike Leonard, ASA Vice President of Government Affairs, said the new report will help lawmakers nationally make better and more informed decisions on impacting fisheries. And so that's...
Yeah, I mean, it's a big deal. There's a lot of money spent in the outdoors. And you're only talking fishing, right?
Yep.
You're not talking the hunting and all the other outdoor activities that relate to that. It's got to be enormous.
It is. And... It's encompassing everything, boating, all elements of boating, it's just crazy, it really is. So, we'll get Ron on. We'll have a little conversation with him about that sometime soon. And real quick story before we have to break down or head on out of here, I should say.
Yep.
There is a video online if you guys want to check it out. It is scary. Washington State skier rescued a snowboarder buried beneath the snow. And the video is literally scary. If you ever skied out west in Powder, you'll realize that there's tree wells. And a tree well, you can ski next to it and fall in. Well, a snowboarder fell in and upside down and couldn't get out. There was a skier just happened to be skiing, saw the snowboard, almost passed him, and stopped, got his skis off, and dug the guy out with a shovel. And he was literally buried. His face was buried. And he would have died. If you get a chance, check it out on YouTube. It is a real life rescue as it happened and pretty doggone spooky. So lots of snow isn't always a good thing. And in that particular case, it was not. So makes it kind of a happy thing. Scary to see it, though. One of those things. But anyway, hey, I'm going to be heading out west going skiing here pretty quick. So see how the snow actually is. It'll be fun. Looking forward to it. Big Sky, here we come. Thanks for joining us, by the way. Don, good to see you.
Yeah, you
Ava, too. Myself, The Valley Outdoors, thanks for joining us. See you next week.